This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Leo. You're listening to Enterprise, and it's Motivational Monday. It's also the last month, 2017. In a few more weeks, a raft of personal resolutions will be made. Shankar Santiam from EQTD Consulting finds it useful time to reflect on things from his personal successes and failures to his aspirations for the future. But why do so many resolutions end up in the to attempt again next year folder of our lives, right? So he's here to share his thoughts on that. So welcome back, Shankar.
You can't keep me down, yeah, Frida. I'm back again.
He's right, because
I just finished a 12-month episode series, whatever you want to call it, last month, and I said, am I coming back? And you went,
yes. Like the phoenix.
Phoenix. Not from the ashes, right? I don't burn the place down every time I'm here.
Okay, so last month we completed your series, The Success Consciousness.
And the book is out. The book is out next month.
All right. Okay, and today you're starting a 12-session series.
Yes. It's all in 12s.
On developing,
I'll be here till next December now.
On developing a personal growth culture. Let me just finish the title. So tell me more about this developing a personal growth culture.
Oh man, I tell you, Frida, what is it that we all want at the end of the day? We want results. So my entire book, my Success Consciousness book, is based on results. And since I have completed the 12-month series and I'm working on my next book, my third book now, and my third book is on developing a personal growth culture.
Uh-huh.
So we want success. And in this last series that I finished last month...
I love how you're using that as a basis for the book.
Yeah, I write. I have a column in a newspaper on a weekly basis here. So I've decided there was my resolution from about 3 years ago that I'm not going to simply randomly rant.
Okay.
What I will do, which is what my wife says I do most of the time. I just have these moments and episodes where I go like, that's not right and this is not right and I want to change the world. And I decided that whilst books are a very old-fashioned way of trying to change the world, people are reading, albeit in different formats right now. Mm. So with the experience, and I'm in a few more years, I'm going to be 50, so I've had a lot of time thinking and reflecting about all the issues and problems and fundamental challenges that people have at work. And I've, you know, put that all together. So the second book, which gets launched next month, towards the end of January, about the time your book gets launched as well, and maybe we should do it together. Yeah. It'll be quite fun, you know what I mean, since we're always doing it together.
Right.
Okay, no, that didn't sound right, doing it together. It's a Monday morning. I'm already on leave, and most people are on leave, and so it's like the brain is not functioning as it should. But essentially, developing a personal growth culture, the environment that you work in is as important as the work that you do. But the responsibility for creating this environment within an organization is not just the human resources department purview. It is not your managing director's problem alone. It is also you have a real strong contributory role in ensuring that the overall environment and the culture that's developed in your organization is appropriate for growth. Because at the end of the day, that's what we all want.
Mm. Okay.
And I know that this word growth, just like in the old days, the word team building is just way too overused all the time. But it's one of those things that you can't really get away from. No matter what we do in our life, we want results. And that's the Success Consciousness book and the idea and the hypothesis that I came up with. And I give you five primary functions of your brain that you need to kind of, you know, develop from purpose to your attitude to the relationships to, you know, personal leadership, and then that leads to results. Now, having done that, I want to give people tools. There are a few things that we really need to think about. Napoleon Hill, in his book Think and Grow Rich, is one of the books that really affected my life when I was very young, and many people who actually read that book have claimed that it is one of those life-changing moments in their life, in their kind of, you know, growth trajectories. Starts off with the first principle of anything is having a definite chief aim. You know, and he uses English of the 1920s in America. Very nice listening to him and also reading his book. But what does that mean, really? And so that's the first premise of a personal growth culture. So over the 12 months that I'm going to be plaguing you, I will focus on things like that, you know. Looking at what it means to be professional. What you know, when you say everyone uses the word, you have to be professional. But what does that actually mean?
Right.
And we think that being professional is essentially a kind of imagery thing, that we have to carry ourselves in a particular way and be savvy. Yes, it's all of that. It's the grooming. It's also the way we look and the way we talk and the way we speak. But more importantly, it is the way we feel and our interface with everyone around us. That needs to be professional. And that's what we're going to talk about next month. And then we'll talk about passion. Passion is another word that we always use. But how do you develop passion for something? And how do you actually not even develop? We have passion within us for various things. How do we identify what we're passionate about? Somebody stopped me last week on Saturday. I was running a short program in the afternoon for one of the largest insurers in Malaysia. And this person who sat through my session came to me at the end and went, and she was 22 or 24, very young. And she said, I like so many things. I don't know what exactly my passion is. So we had a little chat, a 5-minute conversation. And in that 5 minutes, we kind of, you know, I just applied one or two of these things. And I said, think about this, think about this, think about this. And as we spoke, she went, oh, it was a 5-minute conversation. Right. No, I'm not some miracle worker. Yeah, I just have, because I've done it so many times with people, I have to ask about 3 or 4 questions.
And then
that focuses your energy. It focuses your attention on something that you have, a skill that you have. And then you kind of unravel. It unravels itself to you that really, this is what you're good at. And I was made to do this when I was about 28 or 29 years old, which is why now at almost 50, I have some measure of success in my life. It's because someone helped me do this. And it was a simple question that this person asked me years and years ago. What is the one thing that you're good at that you're possibly better than most people?
Right.
It took me some time to think about it. And I thought, I can talk now. this is something which I can do. You know, make me sell something and I can. Give me an idea, and if I buy into that particular idea, I'll be able to sell it to everyone else around me. And that essentially is what I do for a living. I have identified, five key areas and, you know, about 25 steps. And I'm going to spend the next 12 months here on air with you looking at 12 of those 25 key steps that we need to cultivate.
Right. You know, your book is Norman Vincent Peale. My book was The Magic of Thinking Big.
That was Napoleon Hill.
One of them. Yeah,
it's one of those fellas.
And it begins with an N. So today we're starting with lesson number one, which is to build a new mindset for resolutions to work. What advice can you
advise?
Give?
I like the word.
Give us advice about making resolutions.
No one can give you any advice about making resolutions. First thing, the reason why I'm starting off with this is because it's December 2017. We have approximately 2 weeks left of the year, and every management expert, every leadership coach, every business coach, everybody on Enterprise will tell you that you need to have goals for 2018. I agree. You need to have goals for 2018. I'm not disagreeing with all these very clever people. But why is it that, ironically, all of you, all of us, fail miserably in achieving our goals? You made this point earlier. They fall into the to be attempted again next year folder in our life. All of us do that. It's interesting. In this year, I did a little bit of research again. I've just been spending a lot of time reading and trying to understand. It's the thing, as you get older, you realize how little you know about many things, that you tend to want to absorb as much knowledge as you can just to be relevant to everyone else around you. There is an organization in America called the Brain Statistic Institute, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Statistic Brain Research Institute. It's quite an interesting title, which is used by over 3 million people on a monthly basis to gather information, data. It's a data mining spot. And in 2017, they said that, and these were the numbers, 44.3% of New Year's resolutions were to do with self-improvement or education. 42.1% were to do with money. And unsurprisingly, 32.4 were to do with your weight, essentially. And before you all start kind of, you know, doing the maths and go, like, that's more than 100%. Yeah. That's because many of you out there, you will make more than one damn resolution. That's why. But the same research also showed that 25% of the people who made resolutions, which is approximately 70-80% of the planet actually makes resolutions at this point. It's almost like a reset button that we all have. It is something that we do because it makes us feel better. We feel that, you know, we have to do this in order for us to... And also you listen to people like me and all the books and every article and every newspaper and every lifestyle magazine will tell you that right now is for you to think about what you did in 2017 and how you can do things better in 2018. Kapow! You know what I mean? That's what we all end up doing. But that same research from that same institute said that 25% of people who made these resolutions lost steam just 7 days later. In fact, there is a movement of the disillusioned around the world that celebrates the 17th of January each year as the Ditch Your Resolution Day. So those of you, if you're up for it, let me know. Send me an email, shankar@eqtd.com, and maybe we can have a party, Ditch Your Resolution Day. There is, Frida, scientific evidence. There is evidence that why we actually do this. I mean, this is
a Wednesday.
You've already got the date. Yes, yes, I'll give you a spot to meet and we'll all celebrate Ditch Your Resolution Day.
At the Legends.
You could, at the bar, the restaurant, gastro restaurant that I own in Taman. Thank you for the plug for my restaurant.
Okay, go on.
Dr. Timothy Pitchell, an author and associate professor at the Carleton University in Ottawa in Canada, capital of Canada, and also director of this institution, this organization called the Center for Initiatives in Education. Essentially, these are researchers who spend a lot of time, they're psychologists. He says that actually setting resolutions, ladies and gentlemen, all of you out there, setting resolutions is a form of cultural procrastination. That's a scientific problem, right? So they say, the research says that you and I, all of us, we make resolutions as a way of motivating ourselves. Hmm. Yes? Hmm. That's what we do it for. It makes us feel like, you know, wow, something exciting is going to happen in 20. Have you seen all the Facebook page things that people put out in December? Usually it's like they go on to all these various sites, these quizzes, and it'll tell you what will happen to you in 2018. I will meet a hot man in 2018. I am this and I'll become that. I'll become a millionaire. Why do we need to do this? It's a form of motivating ourselves. It's a form of making us feel better. But by and large, the research indicates, in this university in Canada, that we may be doing this to motivate ourselves, but if you are not ready, and more importantly, if you're not willing to change your bad habits, I use the word bad because obviously you want something better, this is not going to happen. Hmm. No matter how many times you declare on the 31st of December, that from the 1st of January you'll be A, B, or C, or you will attempt A, B, or C, or you will lose X amount of kilograms, or you will spend more time with your wife, or you will not spend so much time with your friends, or you will drink about 6 glasses of wine less every week, or in some cases every day. If you're not willing to actually put in the effort, energy, and time, you won't be able to get that. We know this in pretty much every part of our life. Now, the reason why we're so willy-nilly and free about setting resolutions and writing goals is that because when you're writing it, you don't need to do it.
Mm.
In that moment, you don't need to do it, right? You don't actually need to actually do anything. It's just about telling yourself, yeah, man, I'm going to do this. And we're all hugely enthusiastic the first 2 or 3 days. Houses get clean, cars get washed, all sorts of things happen. Clothes get, you know, food is eaten less. And then usually it's after Christmas and New Year. You don't really want to eat anyway because you've stuffed yourself for 5 or 6 days. And you do. I think the only real benefit of setting resolutions is that you detox yourself for the first 2 or 3 days in January because you're trying to lose some weight.
Yeah.
And this is the science behind it, that there's this form of cultural procrastination.
Right. Okay. We'll talk a little bit more about this, developing a personal growth culture. And today is about build a new mindset for resolutions to work with Shankar Center for EQTD Consulting. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
The This is Enterprise. It's Motivational Monday. I'm Frida Liu. Shankar Santir from EQDD Consulting with a whole new series.
He's never left. He's been in the studio for the last month.
He's not here in the daytime, he's here in the evenings, right? Yeah. Developing a personal growth culture, and that's the series. And today is about building a new mindset for resolutions to work, because it is the last month. It's a couple more days before the new year, you know. And early on, we were talking about how when we set this resolutions, it really is cultural procrastination.
It's an attempt to reinvent ourselves.
Right. You know, so can you give us an example to illustrate this point?
Early days of my consulting work, it was about kind of in 2001, 2002, so about 15 years ago. Small timeline, no? I was in my early 30s. I was just getting into this business, and I could do stuff, and I was doing a lot of human resource consulting for companies. And an established fitness center came to me, a Singaporean fitness center.
They left. Yeah,
they came to me and said, we want to expand our footprint into Malaysia. Didn't come to me like that. They were doing it anyway. They, through some connections here that I had with other associates, they came to me and said, we are doing this, and what we need is we'd like you to come, and we'd like to get involved in the interviewing process for our new team, especially the marketing department, as well as the people who are going to be personal trainers. So we've got the benchmarkers in terms of qualifications and physical attributes, etc., that we want, but we'd like you to do some evaluation to see whether, you know, these Malaysians are good enough for us. And I took the brief on. It was one of my first big jobs that I did, which is fantastic. Now, it was very interesting because the owner of this particular business in Singapore is a young man. He was in his mid-30s at the time. He wasn't much older than me, about the same age as me at the time. But he came from a family that did this for some years. So they had quite a few centers in Singapore. They had a few centers in Indonesia and Jakarta. And they were going on this expansion plan into Malaysia and Thailand at the same time. And all the work started June, July of the year. They got a huge premise in Srihar Tamas. It was huge. Five lots and, you know, five lots and five and three floors.
I think
floors
I know what you're talking about.
Huge, right? So the person came to me and said, okay, what we need to do now is, he was rushing the team to get ready to open on the 30th of December that year. Right, which is a little unrealistic in terms of, but he was pressing and pushing and pushing and pushing, getting the place together and all, you know, premise acquisition, trying to find a lot which was big enough and multiple different landlords negotiate. So you can imagine the dramas that went behind this, right? So I was really impressed with this guy. I thought, like, wow, this guy's singular mindedness. And this is what I got to learn about business, how to push through and stuff like that. And then we identified the people who were going to work. And then he personally ran training programs about how to sell to the marketing team. So he inspired them, and then they had their rack rates in terms of yearly subscriptions, and he dropped his yearly subscriptions down by 60%. So you're only paying 40% of what you would pay for it. And for me, I mean, I thought about signing up, and I was so gym averse at the time, you know, but I thought, this is so cheap. He pushed it, and then he incentivized the marketing team to the point where they were like, you know, insurance agents on steroids, if you know what I mean. You know, like, you know, who believed that the world was their oyster and they could do anything they want. So they started selling. They opened already towards the end of December, and towards the middle of December, they already started enrolling. By the time the 29th, 30th of December came, and I was working through this, I realized that the business was being oversubscribed. The overzealous marketeers were selling this one, and people were buying. And then by the 3rd of January, when after the holidays and whatever, we reopened 3rd or 4th, I went back to him and I said, dude, like, really, we're going to have a huge problem. I foresee this problem because you have no space. You have sold it. It sold it five times over than what your capacity is with the lack of people. So you need to give me more. For me, it's like, you need to give me more money so I can go out and recruit more people for you. Pulled me aside quietly and said, Shankar, come, let me let you into a small secret. Chill out. Sit down with me. Calm the hell down. I went, okay, what's up? And he went, okay, you just need to help me for 1 month now. In fact, I'll tell you right away, I'll pay you a lot of money, but then end of January, you have no more work with me. I went like, well, I thought it's a long-term engagement. Yeah, long-term for me is like 3 months. That's enough, all right? I'm like, okay, fine. I did it. I said, what are you going to do with this? You only have to manage for the first month. We need to get our personal trainers, our space, and our marketing people, our administrative people, our front of office reception people, everybody to be aligned, because they're going to get lots and lots of abuse in the first month. They can't lose face. They cannot lose their temper. And they cannot lose our brand value. So which means whatever we do, we'll give them freebies. We'll help. We'll do. I said, but that doesn't solve your space constraint. And he went, don't worry, because by February, everything, and he used this word, everything will normalize. And he went, trust me. And he went, learn from me. And I went, sure, okay. So I thought, you know, he was this. He said it with so much of conviction and passion that I thought, there's something about what he's doing that he understands. By the 1st of February that year, 70% of the people who had signed up for the one-year subscription stopped coming. Can you imagine that? 70% oversubscribed. And he went, this is my business model.
Oh.
My business model is I provide excellent, and they've lasted. They're still there today, right?
Okay.
So this is 15 years down the road or 12 years down the road or whatever. They're still there. And I know that they're growing from strength to strength because they've got a very good brand footprint around Malaysia at the moment and around the region as well. Now, the reason is because of this culture of procrastination and the fact that he knew that if I drop the prices and entice people to sign up, I will tap into a particular emotional psyche that everybody has, and the money helps. And it doesn't matter that, you know, on paper, I also questioned him. I said, 40% only of what you're charging. That means either you're overcharging to start off with, some ridiculously overcharged that you can bring it down by 60%. This is like going to Petaling Street, you know, where they will actually drop the price down by half. You know, somebody says, how much is the handbag? Prada handbag, they go like 200. And all you do is you offer 50 ringgit, you know what I mean, to start off with, and then you negotiate a settlement based on that. At 100, you're happy. In fact, I know you can get it for a lot less than 100, you know? And that seemed like it, so I questioned him on that as well. He said, nah, I know, because it's the zero cost for me. It's easy money. It's clean money. It's my business model.
Right.
My business model is in that first month, that first 2 weeks, I make all the money I need to sustain my business.
Because they sign up for a year.
And they don't come.
Right.
And they have. It's very clear when you buy that 40, you buy it 40%, there's no money back guarantee and all that.
Okay.
No, you pay that amount. This is an amazing thing. To my amazement, he was absolutely right.
So this is a time where the time he's raking it in.
Yeah,
December.
Absolutely. So my advice to everybody out there, and I know my friends Noel and other people who run fitness centers and will be very upset with me. Don't sign up in January. Wait and go in February, right? Because then you know that you're going to do it properly.
Right.
At least there's a higher percentage of that.
No. Okay. So why do you think this is something that many people struggle with? This. You know, going through with meeting our goals.
Well, you know, I refer to this sometimes to my training programs. I refer to this in my column last week in the newspapers as well. There is a accepted psychological term called the false hope syndrome.
Mm.
Again, obviously Canada, they do a lot of research on this because I think the 20 million people there, the huge landmass, things don't get done sometimes, perhaps. But about 2 decades ago, at the University of Toronto, this professor called Janet Polivy, together with a whole bunch of, psychologists, also did some research. And they created this terminology called the false hope syndrome. It seems that we all have very unrealistic expectations of our ability to change.
Mm.
Right? Their research shows that we tend to behave paradoxically, you know, that we don't behave appropriately in persistingly repeating self-change attempts, you know, despite previous failures. This sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it, to all of us? I have this problem sometimes in some parts of my life. You always feel better when you fix goals or establish resolutions, which is what I said earlier.
Yeah.
But when once you start, once you convince yourself that you are onto it, you know, you're on it. Now. You say like, I'm on it. You start with incredible optimism. And that incredible optimism, even when you fail in the first few attempts, that doesn't stop you because you're optimistic.
Mm.
You go like, okay, it was difficult to go to the gym. It's a bit of a struggle, but never mind, I'm going to do it. So the first day, second day, you tell yourself, no worries. You know, within a week, I'll be okay already. I'll be like, my body will be so supple and ready that I'll be waking up in the morning. You know, I hear this sometimes. People say, oh, if I don't get up and go for a run, I don't feel like I've got my day organized. Actually, I heard that from you. You told me that once. You know, if I don't run in the morning, I don't feel good. And as a non-runner, I go like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? I just can't get up to...
I work out every day.
You work out, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's essentially the problem. And once you say that I'm on it and you have this sense of great optimism, you end up setting naive expectations concerning the ease and speed with which you will get things done.
Mm.
You know, that's the other thing that happens to all of us, you know. You think you're going to achieve the target, and it also serves to cloud your own judgment in terms of your previous failings. So when we start something, it's like everything else. You start a new business, you never think you're going to fail. I failed in so many businesses because I never thought I was going to fail.
This time is better.
Well, now I know there's a real 75%, 80% possibility of failure. So I buckle down and I don't get overexcited by immediate wins. I need those immediate wins to keep me motivated and enthusiastic, but I don't get excited to the point where I lose myself and think all is well. Anyone who's opened a restaurant will tell you this. Anyone who's actually ventured out, opened a consult, you know, everyone is an expert at doing this, that, the other. They come out with their life savings to open a consulting business because they think, oh, now I will do that because I'm retiring. I just had a talk with a senior C-suite in one of the largest MNCs in Malaysia, regional MNC, worldwide MNC actually, who's coming off retirement age, is going to end his contract next year. And he's been given a little bit of garden leave as a reward. So he's got 6 months already soon where he doesn't have to go to work. He can start thinking. And he came to talk to me and asked me to coach him to help him set up a business in the consulting sphere as part of what he did. And after spending some time with him, we both concluded that he cannot set up his own business, even though he was running a huge business unit worth billions and billions of ringgit, actually. huge money, you know, millions of euros, hundreds of millions of euros, which is what he was doing, because the personality doesn't suit. Now, I could have taken him down the business resolution pathway and told him that, you know, this thigh slapping, everything is possible. Self-affirmations. We live in this world where it's all about, you know, yes, we can do this. Oh, Malaysia, boleh, semua boleh, everything I can. And the can-do attitude. The can-do attitude. I think a lot of people don't realize that you need to have the can-do attitude. The can-do attitude comes into play when you have difficulties and issues that, you know, pushes you through. Another person recently spoke to me, another C-suite who's been offered a CEO's position, came back and told me that, you know, I really want this job. I think I want to do this, right? And I only questioned that person and I said, but you're very creative and you've always loved to be in the creative sphere. The moment you move from the creative sphere into the CEO management sphere, you're going to have to lose some of that creative urge and start focusing on the real issues, dude, like money. Can you do this or not? And he went, I actually want to do this. I want to do this. I want to get there. And we had a conversation. We had a 2-hour coaching session. At the end of the 2-hour coaching session, we agreed that he needed to go back and be absolutely connected with purpose. Why he might choose to become the CEO of this company, because it was important for him to understand and be deeply emotionally engaged with that connection. He needed it, you know, when? The first 3 months, 6 months again, after 4 months, after that, any time he feels, oh my God, why did I choose to do this? When you feel, oh my God, why did I choose to do this? You need something strong that will bite you back in the bum, come through your psyche and tell you, I know why I chose to do this. Right. So stop whining about this. It's a choice that you made. That's the go-getting attitude. Everyone mistakes this go-getting attitude to just rah-rahing, thigh-slapping, I can start my own business and Bob's your uncle. No, Bob's not your uncle. Bob Holmes is a football pundit, right? He's nobody's uncle, right? Do you know what I mean? So it's at the end of the day, this is the biggest mistake. And this is what the false hope syndrome is.
Right.
That we forget.
Okay. Now
we're sorry about my rant. I just get really passionate about this.
There he goes again. But so with that in mind, right, what can someone do to set and achieve their resolutions of 2018? We'll discuss that after this. We'll hear his rants after this. Shaka Santiram from EQ TV Consulting. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Shaka Santiram from EQTD Consulting is still here on Enterprise.
Continuing his rant.
Frida Liu here. And, you know, this is a whole new series called Developing a Personal Growth Culture. And today's topic is building a new mindset for resolutions to work. And so he was sharing with us why sometimes his resolutions don't work. But so what can someone do to set and achieve these resolutions 2018?
Okay, I stumbled upon this information because I was trying to figure out my own patterns. And I have had a couple of things in my life which I have struggled to change in terms of habits. One is my habit of getting overexcited. I'm by nature a fairly positive person. Therefore, not quite a positive. I'm quite, you know, many things bring me down, but I'm always able to kind of bounce right back because I'm always vibrating. I always look at the best in people. I look at best. And also, I'm a kind of a serial sounds very like boasty. Actually, not bad. And it's not a good thing that has happened to me. I'm like a serial entrepreneur, most of the time failing miserably. Do you know what I mean? So when I say I'm a serial entrepreneur, I'm not one of these like serial entrepreneur who makes it big in life. No, I'm a serial entrepreneur who's really like, you know, messed up really badly all the time. So this is one really bad habit that I had. Another bad habit, smoking. I mean, I struggled with smoking for years. I struggle with smoking today, now.
Now that you've quit.
Yeah. I struggle with it now because I completely enjoy doing it. Do you know what I mean? And that's my heart part, the emotional attachment. Mm. And that's when I realized I need to understand the brain. And I'm not a scientifically inclined person. I'm very right brain, artsy, you know, music and games and football and food and cooking. And that's really my forte. So I'm very illogical in some of my approaches, which is why I can't bake. You have to be very logical as a baker. You know, you got to follow. It's a science. Anything scientific, I kind of lose interest in. But I found that this was so, I was so vested in trying to learn and understand this that I had to go and figure this out myself. So I was trying to figure out how to change habits. And I read various books that didn't help me with my smoking. Eventually, I stumbled upon work done by these two professors. Again, I find a lot of academics, they do a lot of good work. Sometimes it's so hard to read their work because they write it like academics. My father has the same problem. He's a professor, written about 20 books, and I can't read any of his books. I hope he's not listening to this right now. I'm making a family confession here. But because he writes like an academic. Mm. But I plowed through this book by these two guys, Antonio Damasio and Joseph Ledoux. And they were brain scientists. And you know what? I can't explain it to you right now because it's so complex and I don't understand it fully. But suffice to say, one thing that I figured out in my head, which was, they say that in order for you to change your habits, the science says that you need to change the neural pathways in your brain. All right, and that's essentially what it is. Imagine every sci-fi movie. Imagine watching Star Trek Discovery that I'm on, kind of binge watching at the moment as a Trekkie. It's that neural pathway in your brain that needs to be changed. It's a highway that takes you from A to B. Yes. And if you are still on that same highway, I mean, essentially, we call it mindset change. You know? And mindset change, if you can imagine that there is a highway leading from one spot to another, from amygdala to the front of brain, that actually makes you make decisions on what you do, you are on the same highway. So you're on the north-south highway driving from Kuala Lumpur to Penang. And you're deciding that I want to take a different route, but you can't. Because you're on that highway. What do you need to do? You need to take an exit out, pay the toll, get out of that road in order for you to have a different experience. Because no matter how much you recalibrate your brain, if you're on that highway, you're going to have the same visual input. You will know at kilometer this, you will see the Tanjung Malim stop. And in that time, or you will stop at Tapa, which is like, you know, the entire world stops at the Tapa spot. And there are only 12 different shops that sell the same thing and you can't eat anything else. If you want to go and have a wantan mee and you expect panchan wantan mee, which comes from Bidol, you cannot stop in Tapa and expect that guy to deliver the wantan mee to be as nice as that. You have to come out and take a different path. And this, because I'm food, I'm so right brain, I had to equate it to something like this. So it's building new neural pathways. Right. And that's essentially what they say you do. You have to rewire your brain to actually get there. And this is the hardest thing. You know, the hardest thing
for us. You have to stop the cycle, basically.
Yes, you have to get off that highway. Mm. You know? And that's what you need to actually do. So that's how you actually make your resolution stick. Saying that you have a new resolution and being all over enthusiastic about it is not going to happen.
You know what I think?
I want to talk to people who the people who are listening to this. I would really love to talk to you in a couple of weeks' time. Once we pass through the new
January
year,
January 17th.
Yeah, I want to meet you guys on 17th of January. Please, let's have a chat and call me, email me, find me, Facebook me, do whatever, and tell me how you managed. And those of you who actually decided that I'm going to build a new highway and change my neural pathway, and I'm going to explain that to you how I think I've done it, and how I think you can do it. No,
right? Whenever I try to learn something new, and I always say to myself, as I'm doing something something uncomfortable, something that's just so not me, and I say, new neurons, they're being built
right.
My head. So in order for resolutions to work, we must essentially rewire or retrain our brain to think different. Give me a practical example for this.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of things that you need to do, which I think have worked for me with my business dramas and also with my smoking to some very large extent. There are two important tests that you need to take right now. So Frida, before you put out your resolutions for the year, just take those two and then test it against this two. And they're very, very simple. You know, ironically, the science behind it is complex, but the solution is very everyday. First one is emotional engagement. Whatever you choose to write down or agree on and say, I'm going to do this, be absolutely clear that you have to be emotionally engaged with it. If not, it's not going to happen. Right? Saying I want to lose weight is not going to help you at all. Look at yourself in the mirror, you little fatty. I'm telling you, right? Whoever's listening out there, those of you who think you need to lose weight, you're a fatty. But that telling yourself you're a fatty is not going to help you. Mm. What is the reason for it? What is the need for it? What is the emotional attachment to it? Now, I have lost approximately 15 kilos in the last year. Mm. Right? And I've, for the first time in my life, I've managed to keep it off. That's because I fell ill last year and it was life-threatening and I had to lose weight. That's essentially it. I've never said this to anybody outside my family and close friends, right? I fell ill and it was vital for me to lose weight. So every time somebody asks me, I constantly get asked this question by Sharad Kutan here at BFM. Sharad and I look like brothers, right, essentially. But now I'm half the brother he used to be. And I hope he's listening to this right now. He might be. He's standing outside listening to this. He's not smiling and looking into the studio threateningly. But he always asks me, how'd you do this? And essentially, you have to be emotionally engaged in this. And I've actually told him and a few of my friends how I did it. It's just an 80-40. I don't do much exercise. I just eat 40% of what I used to eat before. And I have a few rules that I follow. But it has to be emotionally. And for me, it was
death.
It was staying alive. So I'm hugely, ladies and gentlemen, I'm hugely interested in being alive. Therefore, I finally realized that, it's got to be something totally emotionally engaging for you in order for you to achieve it. I have never been able to keep this weight. I've lost weight up and down many, many times through the years, but I've never been able to keep it off.
The why was really big.
Yeah, the why was really compelling. Mm. It's the same with my business, bad ideas. You know, as I said, I'm hugely excitable. So someone will talk in passing to me and I will craft a business idea around it and say, let's go and do this, you know. And I realized that often my newfound enthusiasm was not matched by fervor. You know, I was overzealously adventurous, essentially. That's essentially what is happening to me. Uh-huh. And you know when I stopped doing it? When I had enough businesses that were successful. Right. And so people told me, oh, now that you have three or four businesses that are successful, you started panicking and you don't want to lose. Actually, no. I had enough businesses that were successful and I started having people that I had to be responsible for. Hmm. Right. So I had teams of people working for me who were earning salaries, who had families, who had children who were going to school, who had mortgages, who had things. And I suddenly realized I cannot willy-nilly just jump off every plane right now and try new things. Right? And this is what happened. A lot of people, right? Now, you, tell me, Frida, you were a party girl in the 1990s. I know you, right? And you were a public personality.
News, live before social media. Thank you.
Newscaster. I mean, like, I had the hots for you, watching you. And all my female friends had the hots for George Miranda. Both of you were friends. Do you remember? You both read the news for RTM at that time. Right? You were a party animal. The moment you had Jude, your life changed. You know why? Because it's an emotional connection and all parents will know exactly what I'm talking about. No matter how much of a fool you were before, the moment you had your first child, life changes because you look at this being in front of you and you go like, oh my God, I'm responsible for this. I got to stop, you know, mucking about now and start having... I mean, yes, there are bad parents also who still go out. Roz Yusuf, I hope you're listening to me. Right? No? Who still go out and party like it's 1984. Right? But still, you know, and it's funny, even though... hardest partier has a responsibility, right? Who will tell me things like, brother, I can't come out I can come out now. I have to go back by 11:30. No, you know why? Oh, because my son's waiting for me. I got to go and put him to bed. I say, your son's like 15. He can look after himself. He goes like, no. I promised him I'll be there. And I'm like, what's happened to the old you? Mm. You know, but I'm okay. I had a friend's reunion recently and all of them have changed. They all suddenly need to go back.
Which is good.
And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Emotional engagement. You have to be emotionally engaged. It must be compelling. No, you won't be able to do it. That's the first one. The second thing which you need to remember is it's tough. It's going to be tough. So I was doing a little bit of, you know, checking around and trying to figure out my habits. And I stumbled upon everyone's favorite social media expert, Mark Zuckerberg. In 2016, at the end of December, he declared on Facebook, which is everyone's favorite pastime, that he was going to run 365 miles that year. This is nerdy Zuckerberg, who doesn't look like he's lifted anything in his life, you know, apart from a keyboard. And he made this declaration. People just laughed. People said 365 miles is the equivalent of 10 marathons, right? And this weed is not going to be able to do it. And then he came out and he posted and he said, 365 miles is the equivalent of 1 mile a day. And 1 mile a day for me, in my bad shape, takes me 10 to 12 minutes to run. I think I can manage 10 to 12 minutes, right? He took this gargantuan task and broke it down into a bite-sized chunk, with bite-sized chunks which he could just do in small spurts and achieve results. On the 15th of July, 2016, he posted on Facebook some 5 months before the end of the year that he'd met his target. That's how successful people do it. They get emotionally engaged and they break it down into smaller targets. You know, lose weight. I have no weight. I have, you know, when I do the weight thing, my weight thing is like almost like a magic that I've worked out finally. I've worked out how to do this. I have no target for my weight. Funny, eh? I have no goal for my weight. But I do. Interesting. How's that? You know, ask me, Shankar, what is that? Let me tell you. All right, it's this. I don't have a goal in terms of losing 5 or 10 or 20 or 15. That's not my goal. My goal is daily. My goal is to only eat 40% of what I used to eat when I was a fatty. That's it.
Right.
I have a goal.
Right.
So every day I have a goal. It's an extremely doable goal. Because when I'm standing there in the mama and filling up my plate with nasi, you know, and then telling Kwa Champo, and I go to all my favorite nasi kanda places because I'm from Penang, I go like, hey, no, rice da. And then when they tell me so little, they speak Tamil to me. Ane, that's all I'm eating, so little. I'm like, samo. And then the fellow's going like, what is this? You're insulting me with the amount of rice that you're eating. I'm like, no, that's 40%. Right? So the place that I go to regularly, the man, Gaffar, the guy who does the Kwa Champo for me, looks, laughs at me and says, 40%? He just tells me, 40%? 40%? You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, 40%. Yeah, please. 40%. Yeah, stop laughing at me, dude. That's it.
Right.
So I have a goal. But I'm vested in the goal. I know what the goal is. The goal is not about losing 10 kgs. The goal is not about losing 15 kgs. The goal is only eating 40% of what I used to. So every time I just look, what will I normally eat? It's funny. The normal now is getting a bit weird because I've been doing it long enough. This has become the new normal for me. So it's not like, I don't say normal anymore. I say, what did I used to eat before when I was a fatty? I like calling myself a fatty because it helps me. I go like, oh yeah, fatty. I don't want to be fatty. I like the way I look right now. Right? And that's it. So the goal is there, but the goal is not unsurmountable because 40% of what I used to eat on a daily basis is completely doable. Right. Every day doable.
And the ultimate reason is because you want to stay alive.
That's right.
So Shankar Santhiram, we'll be back in the new year in our Developing a Personal Growth Culture series. I wonder what we'll be talking about next year. Happy New Year,
Happy
Shankar.
New Year and Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.